Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. The show you're about to hear originally aired on Sunday, August 6th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 272.
August 6th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Ginger Chan, KFI News.
Thank you, Ginger. And welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. This is the chance for the next 3 hours to talk about that stuff that's changing the world. Technology. Everything from gaming machines to computers to the cell phone and MP3 player. This is it. 1-800-520-1KFI. My name is Leo Laporte, in case you haven't been here before. I do this little thing every Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also host a TV show called Call for Help. Did that for years on Tech TV and the Screensavers. Now do Call for Help in Canada and Australia and on Google Video, but that's the only way you can get it in the States. Also have written about a dozen books. Actually, I've lost count on technology and gadgets. The regular gadget guy and Regis and Kelly. And but now, you know, I think the main focus besides this radio show, which actually is my primary focus, but the secondary focus is the podcasts. I'm the podcast king. I have 9 of them and 3 more coming. So it'll be an even dozen by the end of the month. And I love them. They're really fun. It's really what I do during the week. You know, when you work weekends, that gives you 5 days a week. And if I had any sense at all, I would have just taken those 5 days and rested. But I just couldn't, you know. I had the time, and I thought, well, what can I do with the time? I don't want to sit around. And I started doing a podcast about a year ago. We have a tech news roundtable. This show is a podcast. Podcast means just that it's internet audio. You can either listen to on the website. The website is twit.tv. But you can also subscribe to it using iTunes. Most people use iTunes, but there are other programs. And you subscribe to it, and it means you'll get it automatically whenever there's a new show. So you don't have to, you know, check the website all the time. And when there is a new show, you can either listen to it on the computer, but if you have a setup with an iPod or some other MP3 player, and this is why they call it podcasting, it can also copy it directly to the portable player, and that's really where it's the most convenient. So I know many people listen to this show, for instance, those who aren't in the Southern California area, at work or on their way to work. It's copied over to an MP3 player Monday morning. They get up, it's there, and they just put it in the car and listen on the way to work. If you're doing that right now, thank you. Podcasts are amazing. I'm just really excited. I do some video, but mostly they're audio, because I'm a radio guy. One of the things we will do also, and it's a new podcast we're going to launch, but we do a video podcast called Mac Break for Mac enthusiasts. It's the first podcast shot in 1080p high def. They've got two of these, like, several $100,000 cameras, really expensive cameras. And we shoot it at 1080p. Nobody can really watch it at that high resolution. So we offer, you know, iPod versions and desktop versions that are, you know, 540p or less. But there is a 1080p version. It's huge. It's like half a gigabyte per show. But you know, hey, if you've got a computer that can support it, we can do it. Anyway, tomorrow We'll be launching a new show, an audio edition of MacBreak. We're going to call it MacBreak Weekly. It'll be a weekly roundtable, kind of based on Twit, the roundtable I already do this week in tech. But it'll be for Mac only. And it's a good week to launch it because tomorrow begins Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. Now, normally, these developer conferences, and Intel does one, the IDF, the Intel Developers Forum. Microsoft does one, WinHack. Actually, Microsoft does several. These developer forums are normally not for public consumption. They're for people who are in the biz and who are making software for Macs or making software for Windows or using Intel chips. So they're really kind of insidery. Somehow, though, WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference, the Apple conference, has become more and more a place where Apple will make announcements. And since everybody kind of agrees that some announcements are due from Apple, there's a lot of speculation about what's going to happen tomorrow. Some of it wild. If you go to Engadget, there is a picture on Engadget that is, I mean, it's clearly photoshopped of an iTunes phone. I think they called it the iChat phone or iChat portable, something like that. And it's, if Apple ships a thing that looked like that, no one would buy it. I can tell you right now. But there are persistent rumors that Apple is not only doing a phone, and I do think they have a phone. This is one of the reasons the rumors start, is that as any big company, they're always trying things out. And there are prototypes inside Apple's headquarters, locked up tight, of all kinds of things, including a touchscreen, large screen video iPod, including an iChat phone and many other devices. I've talked to people who claim they've seen them or who claim they have friends who've seen them. You know how these things are. So I have no doubt such a thing exists. The only question is whether Apple wants to release such a thing. And I don't know. It's a tough business, the cell phone business. You've got to make partnerships with cell phone companies because you can't just sell the phone. You've got to have a carrier, right? But I think there are a lot of people who would love to see a phone that is the elegance of the iPod, say, with maybe a camera and Wi-Fi. I mean, Apple could do. I mean, look at this is something Apple could do. Whether they will is another business. Another question. Is this a new business for them that they want to get into? No question about one of the things Apple's already said they'll be talking about, and that is Leopard, the next version of OS X. But we don't know much about it. There are lots of rumors, according to O'Grady's Power Page, where the notorious and wrong rumor that Apple was going to release a HD TV a couple of months ago came from. I think this guy just makes up stuff. But, you know, they have some claims about what'll be in there. The real question is what kind of Windows support will be in Leopard. I think there's a lot of interest now in the Apple hardware from Windows users because finally you can run Windows easily, and you can, so it gives you a chance to run both. It's the only kind of computer that allows you to run both Mac and Windows, and Linux too if you want to. There's Linux as well. You buy a copy of Parallels Desktop, which is inexpensive. It's under 100, I think it's 80 bucks, 60 bucks. And you can install a Linux desktop and a Windows desktop and all run it simultaneously within your Mac desktop. That's pretty attractive to a lot of people. So we know we'll see Leopard. We may see some people say a new iPod. They certainly do. It's been 8 months, I think, right? December was the last iPod announcement. They're due. What else could we see? Well, I think one thing we'll probably, almost undoubtedly see is the first Apple Macintosh towers based on Intel chips. They'll be based on the Core 2 chips. I think Apple's been waiting for these. These will be very nice, high-end systems, I think. Very attractive. Probably very expensive. We'll see. But therefore, the pros, the photographers, the printers, you know, the magazine people, folks who really tax their computer, they need, you know, Pixar, people who make movies, they really need the processor power. I use a dual G5 as my main Mac, and it's plenty fast enough. But I guess eventually the fact that it's not Intel will be a problem. So there's lots of rumors. It's always exciting. What we're going to do for Mac Break is we'll be down there tomorrow with cameras. If there is new hardware announced, Apple's promised to give us a sneak peek, so we'll be able to get a tour of the product and show you as much as we can. It won't be a review, obviously. But, you know, we'll give you what we can. And we'll do that. We'll try to get that out by the end of the day on Monday. Of course, there's a lot of live coverage from chat rooms and stuff. I don't know if you can see the keynote live. You might be on Apple's site. And then on Wednesday, by the time the dust has settled and we've actually had a chance to play with this stuff and know a little bit more about it, we're going to do the first audio podcast, the Mac Break Weekly, and that'll come out on twit.tv probably Wednesday, early Monday morning. And David Pogue of the New York Times is joining us. Chris Breen of Macworld. I'll be there. Alex Lindsay. I've asked Amber MacArthur, who is a Mac fanatic and my co-host in Canada. We'll probably get Jason Snell of Mac World Magazine. So we'll try to get a pretty good roundtable of real Mac experts to analyze whatever Apple announces. This is amazing how the attention Apple gets. Somebody pointed out, and I think this is probably true, that Dell doesn't get this much attention when it announces its Core 2 chip, its Core 2 computer. That's a good point. But there are a lot of PC manufacturers. There's only one Mac manufacturer. So what they do is fairly significant. Everybody is doing a Core 2 desktop. I got my Tiger Direct catalog, and even they are doing, a number of Core 2 desktops. Soon we'll see Core 2 laptops. I'm excited about that. Certainly we talk about them, and I have been recommending them for some time now. There's always some interest, something about Apple, isn't there? Some sort of magic they've got. And it drives, I know many of you crazy, it drives the Windows fans crazy. I think anybody's crazy to be a fan of any kind of operating system. It's just a computer. It's just a computer. I use them all. Linux, Mac, and Windows. I got to. So it's just you can love it, but it doesn't love you back. Let's put it that way. Let's talk about that. What do you think Apple's going to do? Or maybe you don't care. Want to talk about your PC or your cell phone or your camcorder, or your MP3 player, your home theater? 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. Here's your chance. Your turn to talk. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Hate that behind the eight ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. More stimulating weekends.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's who I am on KFI. Show notes are online on the website. Go to KFIAM640.com. Click the shows menu, and my name, Leo Laporte, is under there. And then click that, and then click the official website on my page underneath my picture. That'll take you to leo.am. Which is six letters, but that's easier. But I want you to go through KFI site, and when you get there, go to Sunday's show. This is show 272. Shuby's taking the show notes. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put the comment box back in. We've been having trouble with spammers, and if everybody is good and nice and kind and stops spamming the show notes, I don't mind opposing opinions. In fact, that's the whole point of the comments section. I want to hear the opposing opinions, but I don't need spam in there. I don't need eight paragraphs of garbage. So, and if you make your point, make it, and that's it. You're done. So I will turn it back on. You know what? We do this show notes is kind of neat. We do it with a wiki, which is a kind of website that is editable, and it makes it so easy to make changes to it without going into HTML and all of that. It's very powerful. I love wikis. This is PM Wikis, the software I use. Did an interview, which will air in a couple of weeks on the Twit Network, with the creator of PHP. That's the language. This is written in. The websites are all my websites are in PHP. It's a great web language. And it's kind of a neat story because he's not a programmer. He was an engineer who wanted to make it easy. He wanted to do some widgets on, like a counter and stuff on his webpage. So he just created kind of this simple way to make widgets on a web page. He called it personal homepage. And the thing grew like topsy. Obviously, there was a need for it. And it just took off. Kind of a neat story. Very unassuming, nice guy. And that'll be one, another podcast. I do a podcast. Most of the podcasts I do are stuff that I wouldn't put on this show because it's too geeky. It's really hardcore. But it gives me an outlet for my inner geek. Let's head to the phones. Gail is on the line. Riverside, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I work for a nonprofit, and I use my laptop a lot. And
yeah.
I bought a reconditioned Toshiba Tektra 9100 in about 2003.
Okay.
And it worked for about 6 months, and then it wouldn't use the CD-ROM thing. Wouldn't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it to an authorized dealer who said it wasn't covered anymore.
Right.
And that cost me like $500 to get the CD player working.
Yeah.
I mean,
there,
the
that's
DVD player.
$500?
Yeah.
Jeez
they
Louise.
They said, oh, it needed this and that and that.
This is generally why I don't recommend used laptops.
Yeah, well, I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
Anyway, now it's not working. The DVD player is not working again.
Because
my speakers are gone, and the geek guys looked at it and said, oh, no, they're gone. So you need a new motherboard.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So anyway, I need a laptop that works.
I don't blame you. Oh, that's awful.
That's going to, like, and when I take it on the road and I try to connect, it doesn't connect well.
Yeah, no, it's time. The reason I don't recommend used laptops, I mean, used computers aren't necessarily a bad idea, but the truth is the value of a computer goes down really, really rapidly, almost instantly. And there's a good reason. The technology is obsolete the day you open the box, but laptops are worse because they get banged around. You know, they're portable. You don't know what kind of treatment a laptop's received. It's, you know, it's the little old lady from Pasadena. Oh, I only use it at home on my desk. I never took it anywhere. Well, if that's true, then that would be a good deal. But otherwise, I don't recommend them.
Yeah,
so it's time to get a new laptop. Is it mostly word processing and internet and email, stuff like that?
Right. And I would like to be able to, if I, you know, have to go to a conference or something, sometimes I go to 2-3-day conferences, and I'd like to be able to watch a movie on it.
So you want a DVD player, of course, yeah.
Right. And I was wondering, are those convertible laptops that you can take notes on?
Yeah.
Are those any good?
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, I'm not a huge Windows fan these days because of the security issues with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
I would generally recommend a MacBook, but which is about $1,000, $1,099. If you really want the ability to do handwriting, then the tablet PCs are fine. The handwriting is, you know, it's a computer. It does its best.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
Some people swear by them. Most people, I think, end up swearing at them. However, the good thing about a convertible, and I have one, I bought an HP convertible about a year ago. The good thing about a convertible, it's still a laptop in every respect. So it's not like you're giving up the laptop. You're just adding a feature, which is this handwriting recognition and a touch screen. And there's some nice things. I mean, you know, it's really easy to surf. You just fold the lid down and it's just a screen and you can surf with the pen. There's some nice things about it. I think, frankly, it's not ready for prime time yet. For some specialized uses, it's good. The reason I bought it, I foolishly sat next to a guy on an airplane who used it to do PowerPoint, and he said, look, while I'm giving my presentations, I can circle things, and I was so wowed by his demo, I went out and bought one, and I hardly ever use it.
Okay. I would use it like maybe once a month to take notes at a meeting, so it's probably...
You know, paper's better.
Okay.
It works better.
Where can I get an...
I'd look at a Mac. I'd look at a Mac if I were you.
Oh, I'm 55 years old. I, like, don't want to learn stuff.
Well, good news. You're going to get to learn security, how to secure a laptop, how to keep people from hacking you, how to keep from getting spyware and viruses. I mean, I think Windows is a nightmare. But if you insist, the best convertibles are the Lenovo's. I really like them. In fact, my call screener was just asking me the same question. If you want the tablet, the Lenovo's are very good. The X series, we're talking about $1,800. Is that in your price range?
No, I want cheaper. So let's...
Okay, hang on the line. Let's see if I can find you something cheaper. Okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Ginger Chan is in the KFI News Center.
Listen to KFI live online 24/7. KFI AM 640.com.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. We've got one of the thornier problems I've faced in the last few weeks. Gail in Riverside, she's just stubborn. She's already been burned once by buying an old used laptop, which ended up costing her twice as much as she paid. I bet it was twice as much, right? How much did you pay for the laptop originally, Gail?
I paid, I think, $1,000.
Oh, okay. All right. You can get a good laptop now for $1,000. What's your budget this time around?
I've been burnt by this one so bad. It's like, you know, do I need to spend...
It's a false economy. You mean you want to spend less?
Well, no, I just want to make sure I get one that's going to work. And, you know, I thought maybe you could help me, you know.
Well, it's a false economy to spend less. You understand that, right? I mean, you spend $1,000 on a used laptop, it costs you $500 to repair it, and you never really got it to work right.
Right.
You're not saving money.
Okay.
You can get a Dell laptop. The basic, cheapest Dell Inspiron that they make is $450.
Okay, but will it work? Because I use...
Of course it'll work.
But, I mean, will it... I also use it to do GPS in the car, you know, so I don't get lost.
That's not that demanding.
Yeah, okay.
$450. I mean, hey, it costs less than it costs to repair the DVD in the old one. And Dell makes good stuff. Now, the reason they have such a cheap starting price is they hope to get you in there and you start clicking the buttons and you go, well, let me add a little more memory because that's only 256, so that's not enough, right? Oh, let me add a little more memory. Well, I'd like a bigger hard drive. And by the time you're done, you've doubled the price. But I don't think that's such a bad thing. I mean, you don't need a very fast laptop. The only things you really need are a DVD player. You like the idea of a tablet. They offer tablets as well. But I think you should try a tablet before you buy a tablet. I think you should go somewhere, go to a computer store that sells tablets, and try writing on it just to see if you can live with it.
I tried that. I went to Best Buy.
What'd you think?
Well, they couldn't unlock it so that I could use it, and there was
nobody there
to help me to explain it, and I just got frustrated.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I frustrate easy.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Computers, though, they're frustrating. So I can't help you but, not get frustrated. But I do think that you will do yourself a disservice if you try to go too cheap. Only because, I don't know. One attitude would be spend $450 and consider it a disposable laptop.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you get a couple of years out of it.
I don't want it to be god awful slow either. So.
It's not actually. It's faster than what you have, undoubtedly.
Okay.
What's the processor in the one you have? Do you know?
No.
Yeah.
It was the fastest at the time.
At the time. But this is a Celeron M.
Now, this is not Celeron. This is the Intel.
Yeah, these are Intel.
Pentium 4, it says so right
Yeah,
there.
Okay, that's faster than a Pentium 4. Pentium 4 is not that fast. What I would recommend is kind of a little bit up from the one, the lowest end one. The Inspiron B130, okay? It's a 15-inch screen. That's a good screen. It has a DVD player, not a DVD recorder, but it has a CD recorder. It's only a 40-gig hard drive, but doesn't sound like you're going to be putting a lot of data on there.
Mm-mm.
It has 512 megs of RAM. That's plenty. It has a Pentium M processor at 1.7 gigahertz. That's a good processor. Not the state of the art, but it's a good processor. You get a one-year warranty, one-year mail-in service, and you're talking $539.
Okay. Now, what was that called again?
That's the Dell, D-E-L-L. It's a mail order.
Oh, the Dell. Okay.
Yeah. And Dell makes good quality products. Okay. Inspiron, like inspiration, only it's with an iron. I know, this is the worst name ever. I don't know where they came up with Inspiron, but that's the name of it. Nobody could even pronounce it. And the model is the B130, and there's various configurations depending on what you want. But the mid-range one for $539, that's kind of everything you need. I don't see you needing a whole lot more than that.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Well, thank you for
all
your
right.
time.
You're welcome. I'm glad we could save you a little money. I think spending $1,000 on a used laptop's nuts. I wish I could have talked her into a Mac. Because, and I'll tell you why, just listening to her, I get a feeling sometimes when I talk to people. I think that she's gonna have some security issues. Do you get that feeling when you listen? That maybe she's going to get some spyware viruses. I don't know. I'm not convinced, but it's just, the advantage of getting a Mac for a novice user, an experienced user who doesn't want to become an expert in security, doesn't want to spend you don't include the cost of security in the price of the laptop, but you've got to consider that. A couple $100 on extra security programs and routers and stuff, and she doesn't sound like she's going to do it. I predict we'll be hearing from Gail again down the road. That's my prediction. John in Palos Verdes, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, John.
Oh, hi. Leo, I have a question. Is there a way to protect from radiation when I'm using my computer?
There was a lot of noise a few years ago about radiation. The noise was mostly about CRTs, not LCDs. Do you have an LCD display or a CRT display?
Well, I have an iMac.
Okay, so that's not a CRT. That's an LCD display. The only real significant radiation in a computer comes from the CRT, the glass cathode ray tube monitor, similar to your TV. It comes out the back. There has never been a study that demonstrates conclusively that there's danger. I think it's not unreasonable to be prudent, and the very strict Swedish standards for radiation, were imposed on these monitors. And, if you were worried about it, you'd buy one that followed the Swedish standard. But it's not an issue with LCDs. They do not have the same kind of radiation. Now, all electronic devices put out some form of radio frequency you know, and if you're one of the people that believes that's an issue, then sit farther away.
Okay.
But you can't cover it with tin foil. You can't. And personally, and I'm open to the idea that these could be dangerous. I don't have any vested interest in it not being dangerous.
Uh-huh.
But personally, I have not seen anything that in any way scares me. And everything I have seen, it seems fairly conclusive that modern computers are not. Look, it's no more of a hazard than your, it's less of a hazard than your television, your microwave, many other devices in your house. Of course, you spend more time closer to your computer. Distance is the best way to protect yourself. So keep your screen and your computer at arm's length. Mm-hmm. I think you've reduced considerably the amount of radiation you get if you do that. And I wouldn't worry about it.
What about laptops? I've heard they put out a lot of radiation.
You know, most of the evidence I've seen of the dangers of laptops is not from the radiation, but the heat.
Oh.
And it's young men who keep the laptop in their lap and are temporarily reducing their sperm counts.
Uh-huh.
Because apparently that's how you do it. So, and some people wouldn't mind that. Don't put the laptop in your lap, I would say, if you can. Use it on a table, on an airline table tray, or, you know, don't, you know, the less you lap it, the better. I use a lap desk when I'm in a chair. Not for radiation, but just to, actually, it's better for the laptop, too. It cools the laptop. I'm not too worried about sterilizing myself at this point. But so that I don't, you know, I'd like to see where these studies are. There's a lot of alarmist stuff out there. And there certainly are a lot of things to worry about in the environment. I don't think computers are one of the big ones. Don't put it in your lap right next to your special places. You know, that's probably prudent. But if you put it on a desk, the really good thing is that this kind of radio frequency interference really diminishes with distance. And remember, we've got microwaves and low power, radiation going through us all the time. This radio signal that you're listening to is going through you and everything around you all the time. We're awash in radiation. I think it's unlikely that it's going to cause a problem. I really do. Gordon Gilroy, welcome, KFI. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, hold on, Gordon. We got to take a break, but I will get you next. You're next on the line on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1147.
This is Steve Gregory along the U.S.-Mexico border. Join me tomorrow morning for my special report on guarding the border.
On KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Seven away from noon on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Dr. Dina Dell coming up at 2 this afternoon. It's going to be a great day on KFI, and I'm glad you're here. I'm here every Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2, talking about tech. Tech is such a big part of our life nowadays. I mean, you look at kids, and they're surrounded by tech. They're surrounded by chat, cell phones. We used to have the debate a few years ago, should children have cell phones? You know, should my 11-year-old or 12-year-old have a cell phone? That's not really a debate anymore, is it? How many kids do you see with cell phones? Everybody in junior high, it seems like, has a cell phone. It's just amazing. It's a part of our lives. It's something we may not all agree about. Sometimes we're worried about radiation. But, there's a big question on cell phone radiation. And I'm not convinced that cell phones are absolutely safe. That thing is a transmitter. Unlike your computer, which is an inadvertent transmitter, a cell phone is actually intended to be a transmitter. Low power, yes, but it has to have enough power to reach the cell. And you put it right next to your ear? Does it stop me? No. Do I spend a lot of time on the cell phone? Yes. Some people put in earpieces, right? They think, oh, well, that's going to save me. That just makes it nice, clean conduit right into your ear for the cell phone's energy. Okay, I'll use Bluetooth. Let me think. Okay, now I have a radiation device, a radio on my hip aimed at my kidneys and liver, and I have another wireless device, a little transmitter, Bluetooth transmitter, aimed at my brain. That's a good solution. Double your money. On the other hand, I've been to the FCC. I've seen how they test cell phones. It's really kind of amazing. They have this human form that they fill with a gelatinous material that simulates conductivity of human flesh in terms of radio frequency. And they have a positioner that moves the cell phone around the form, and then inside the form they have a receiver, and they actually measure the radiation from the cell phone. I don't know what they do with that. What we don't know, what we have no information on, is how much is too much or how much is safe. We just don't know. We're only guessing. All right, I apologize for putting you on hold, Gordon. You're back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Gordon and Gilroy, the garlic capital of the world. Hello, Gordon.
Hey, Leo. I got a quick question for you. I have a 4-year-old laptop that has a 40-gig hard drive in it, and I want to put a 120-gig hard drive in it. I was wondering what the process would be. I have an external 60-gig hard drive, and if I got something like Norton Ghost or Drive Image...
That'd work. The real issue, there's a couple of issues. First of all, some laptops, it's easy to get another hard drive in it. You know, they have IBMs have an opening. You open up and you slide in a drive. Some are very, very hard. They're not intended to be upgraded. And then the other issue is whether you can handle 120 gigs.
Okay. It's a Dell Inspiron 8200.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, some computers will be able to and some will not. You're using Service Pack 2 XP?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, well, that's important. Otherwise, you'd have trouble there. You probably can see it. So, what I would probably do if you have an external enclosure, that'd be the easiest way to do it, is to take the old... You'll need a laptop enclosure.
Yes, uh-huh.
And take the old laptop drive out and put it in the external enclosure, put a new one in, and then you can copy the old drive to the new drive. You probably want to reinstall Windows, but you don't have to. Another way to do it would be... to ghost, as you say, since you have an existing external drive, to ghost, that'd probably be the easiest, actually. Ghost the original drive while it's still in, then make the swap. Then, do you have a CD in there?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, so you can boot Ghost from a CD and restore it from the external to the internal.
Well, when I buy the hard drive itself, I was thinking about possibly getting one on eBay or something like that. But anyway, it's going to have to be formatted and all that, right?
Well, Ghost actually writes formatting as well as the data. So, no, I don't think so. It'll just, that's the beauty of Ghost. It takes an existing drive and blasts it back to the way the old one was.
Okay.
So I think it's pretty straightforward. Yeah, I think that actually your plan is good.
Yeah. Well,
and just be prepared to have the disks in case, you know, have the Windows install disk in case it doesn't work.
Sure.
But the only, you know, the two real catches are, you know, how hard is it to swap drives? I don't know on that machine, but Dell always made it pretty easy, as I remember.
Yeah, I've already.
You've looked into that. And then whether it'll support 120 gigs, and, you know, you'll find out when you put it in. Service Pack 2 will help. As far as I know, I think that you shouldn't have any trouble.
Yeah, I guess I can contact Dell.
Yeah, they'll tell you.
Okay.
Good luck, Gordon.
Thanks.
Sounds like a good Sunday afternoon project. I always recommend starting those things Friday evening or Saturday morning because, you know, sure, it's an afternoon project. Sometimes they take 2 days, though. Depends on whether you need the notebook on Monday or not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Shuby's got the show notes. He's got them in hand. They're online, as I mentioned, at leo.am. Chat room is going great guns. It's a great place to be, like the wiseacre in the back of the class, 111 folks in there, along with our fantastic chat moderators, Dan and Dustin and Mike and Oliver and Sweeks. That's at irc.dslextreme.com. It is 11:59. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
August 6, 2006. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's our number, 1-800-520-1534. Sue in San Diego, you are next on KFI. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Leo. My question is about satellite radio.
Okay.
I'd like to get one for my brother who lives in Mexico as a surprise. I don't know what you recommend XM
that's,
versus
that's nice.
Sirius?
Well, the real choice is comes down to programming. You have to look at what's on the two different satellite systems. If, for instance, he's into NPR, then Sirius would be the choice. If he's into Major League Baseball, I think it's XM. So you really have to kind of...
Mostly music.
Music, they're pretty much the same. I happen to like XM's quality a little bit better.
Okay.
To me, the Sirius channels sound more compressed. Now, the question, you know, if he wanted Howard Stern, he'd have to get a Sirius, right? If he wants Oprah, he, you know, so they're very competitive with one another, and they realize the best way to get people is programming. The prices are the same. The products, you know, the hardware is pretty much the same. It's all comes down to the programming. I happen to think, you know, if I were you, I would get XM. But again, you know, it just depends on what he likes. If you say it's just music, then I think XM is a very good choice.
And reception down there should be no problem.
You know, that's a good question. I haven't tried it down there. In theory, it's North America. It's U.S. only.
Right. That's what their website says.
It's pretty hard for a satellite to exclude Mexico. So when they say U.S. only, most of the time what they mean is we will only sell receivers into the U.S. But see, if you buy it and ship it to Mexico, he couldn't pay for it, though. You know, he'd have to use an American credit card to pay for it.
Right, and
the subscription.
He could do that.
So if he has an American credit card, where in Mexico is he?
He's down by Cabo San Lucas.
So he's not that far south.
No.
I would think that would be the only issue. You know, the curvature of the Earth and the visibility to the satellite. I would be shocked if you couldn't get it in Cabo. But let's ask our audience if people have used it in Cabo.
Okay. Now, what about hardware? Do you need one for the car and one for the house? And
there is a portable hardware that is transportable. So you can Delphi makes a good system, for instance, that the XM receiver itself and tuner is a little device that docks. And you have a dock in the car and you have a dock at home. And this is probably what you want to do unless you want to pay two subscription fees. So then you, because each device has to have its own subscription.
I see.
So then you take you dock it in the car and you listen in the car. And when you get home, you take it out of the car, which is probably a good idea in Mexico. And then you bring it into the house and you listen in the house.
So it doesn't need to be hooked up to your car radio.
Yes, it does. It does. Although there are various ways to do it. I mean, the cleanest way is to get an auto stereo installer to do it. But no, you can actually, just as you would with an iPod or whatever, you can hook it up to the stereo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that something that he could install himself?
I think so. You should, when you go to the store, explain that, you know, we're not going to have a car stereo installer do it, and they will show you a variety of ways to do it.
Super.
Now, okay. I'm looking in the chat room, and a number of people in the chat room say that Sirius works just fine in Mexico. So if Sirius works, XM is going to work.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, it's not legal because they haven't licensed it to Mexico, but I don't think it's going to be any problem.
Great.
There are a lot of,
yeah,
you're welcome. There are a lot of people who watch DirecTV in Mexico, listen to satellite radio in Mexico. You know, a satellite has a big footprint. You can't really prevent it. All you could do is say, well, you can't pay for it unless you have a U.S. address. And that's how they do it. They just got, satellite radio just got into Canada a few months ago, legally. Legally. So, yeah, I mean, I have not yet bought satellite radio. I don't listen to that much radio. When I do, the stations I want, I can hear, like KFI, there's not a problem. And in fact, if I can't hear it, I just tune in on the net. But frankly, I find most of the time, if I'm listening to music, I'm listening to an iPod. And I like books on tape. But I think a satellite solution is a very good solution if you're not in an urban area. Or if you're south of the border, where you know all you get is Mexican radio stations, that's actually a great idea. They're kind of missing a bet by not really pushing it in Mexico. I think there are a lot of U.S. expats that'd be glad to do that. Let's say hi to Samuel in Indiana. Welcome, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a question about virtual memory.
Okay.
I'm getting a message that says that my virtual memory is too low.
Yeah. So that's Windows. And,
yes.
And the best way to handle that, I'm going to put you on hold just because it's noisy in the background, but I'll pick you up in a second so that we can talk. But the best way to handle that, virtual memory, just so you understand, all operating systems do it. They call it a page file in XP. Sometimes they call it a swap file. The idea is if you run out of RAM, You have 5, 12 megabytes or maybe a gigabyte of RAM, considerably less RAM than you have hard drive space. If you run out of RAM, you've got too many programs at once, well, the computer could just say, I'm sorry, I give up. It could crash, or it could try to find some alternate strategy, and that's what all computer operating systems do. They say, well, we don't want to crash. We don't want to say no, so what we'll do is we'll use hard drive space as virtual memory, as imaginary memory. Now, there's a drawback to that. It's much, hundreds of times slower than RAM, maybe thousands of times slower. It's significantly slower. So you don't want to be using virtual memory. Ideally, you'd have enough RAM to do all the things you want to do and not have to hit the hard drive. But it's a great backup system. So if you're running out of virtual memory, well, you've obviously not allocated a lot or enough. Then there are two reasons that could happen. One, you could have elected to manage it yourself, which with XP is probably a mistake. If you open the system properties control panel and you hit the advanced tab, then press the settings button, then press the advanced tab again. Man, they hide this thing. And then press the change button. How many clicks is that? You counting? You can get to virtual memory. And I generally recommend let Windows do it itself. In the old days, in XP they call it system managed size. In the old days, in 95 and 98, when Windows had a much less effective memory manager, we would say you would get better performance by picking creating your own swap file, preferably not on the main Windows drive. If you had a secondary drive, that's a better place to do it. Put it on a partition close to the front of the drive so it's fastest, and set a fixed size so it doesn't keep resizing it. And I notice, I'm just looking at my settings, that I have in fact done that. But I think nowadays we just recommend that you let the system manage it. In fact, I'm going to switch that right now. Let the system manage it, because Windows XP does a very good job these days. I had actually created a swap partition on the fastest part of my secondary drive, and I made that be and I used the whole amount, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to go back to system manage and see if that makes any difference. Probably not a noticeable difference. Now, that's one reason, is if you did it yourself and you put it on a drive and you didn't give it enough. You should give it at least, the rule of thumb is 1.5 times the system memory. I'd say even more. I'd say, allocate, what did I put there? Almost 2 gigabytes. That's what I allocated. And I have a gig of RAM. 2 gigs with a gig of RAM, that'd be enough. The other reason you'd be running out, of course, is if you're running out of hard drive space. So if you're running out of hard drive space, it can't allocate the memory. Do you think that is that what's going on, that you're running out of hard drive space?
I'm not real sure, to be honest.
I'd look at your hard drive and see if it's getting low. If it is, that's really more a cause for concern for a lot of reasons. Windows does not like getting low on hard drive space. That's the time to empty the recycle bin, try to get rid of, uninstall programs you don't use, delete old files. So are you managing this virtual memory yourself? Did you set your own settings, or are you letting the system do it?
I'm letting the system
All right.
do it.
So it's likely then that you're just running out of hard drive space.
Okay, it says I've got 60 gigabytes.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I had another question. I don't know if you have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's the difference between a pre-in router and a draft-in router?
The pre-in preceded the draft. We're now in draft. N is the new 802.11n spec. And since the spec has moved along from pre-approval to draft, which means they're close to approval, the next step is approval, they're just starting to mark the boxes differently. It's going to be the same. The real key on N is to use a router that uses the Airgo chipset, A-I-R-G-O chipset. That's the only really good N chipset. And
okay.
Linksys and Belkin both are Airgo-based. Now, N is in trouble. And it's funny, when people first started asking me about pre-N with the Belkin router, I said, don't do it, because you never want to buy something based on something that's not a formal spec, and you don't know what's going to happen. And everybody called and said, no, the Belkin pre-N works great. You use, as long as you're using pre-N Belkin stuff all around, you're fine. And you get, and it's true, you get a lot faster throughput. It goes a lot farther. Everybody loves it and raves about it. But my instinct might have been right, because now what we're finding is that the pre-N standard, the draft proposal, has problems. And Airgo ironically, is the one that's raised the issue. It causes interference with other routers, other Wi-Fi routers. Sometimes significant. It can knock them off the air. We thought that that wouldn't happen. We thought MIMO, this multiple in, multiple out standard that the new N routers use, wouldn't be prone to this, but apparently it is. And Ergo knows they're making the thing, and they want the standard changed. They say the way the standard is now is a problem. So, you know, if you went out and bought a pre-N router now, and you bought all compatible hardware, you're fine. It's not like, you know, the changing standard will affect that stuff. But if the standard does change, you're not going to be able to buy new stuff to go with it. You're kind of stuck with that. So consider that a one-time only investment. And you may, down the road, end up scrapping the whole system and getting a new system based on the actual N, depending on whether they can upgrade. Often they can in firmware. So it's a little disappointing, frankly. I think our hopes were very high for N. This stuff moves fast. I'll keep you posted on that. But right now, I think it's okay to buy a draft or pre-N. It's going to be the same thing. And I think the Belkin is probably the best way to go. It certainly doesn't look as funny looking as the Linksys. Linksys looks like something you'd see on Art Bell. It really is a strange looking router. So go with a Belkin. Understand that you're not going to get the benefit unless you go all Belkin all throughout. You know, even your laptops and desktops have to have Belkin pre-N or draft-N hardware. And cross your fingers, it'll be firmware upgradable so that when the final N spec does come out, you'll be able to modify your routers and your cards to be compatible with the actual N standard. There's no guarantee. It seems likely, but there's no guarantee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1219.
KFI News. Fox News. Together, bringing you the big stories. KFI AM 640.
1225 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We got a call from an older woman who is interested in getting a basic cheap computer. This is the kind of question I get a lot. My mom is an example. And the problem is cheap and basic sometimes don't really go together. It's often the novices who need a little bit more expensive computer. You know, a hacker, a guy who's a computer enthusiast, a wizard, can build his own system for a couple of $100 and, you know, because he knows how to use it and he can work with it. And if it doesn't work right, he knows how to fix it. But if you're a novice, if you don't know a lot about computers, the cheapest system is probably not the best system for you. I would get a Mac. I think there's no question about it for a novice. And I probably would look at an iMac. They're not that cheap. They're like $1,299, the bottom of the line iMac. But you get everything you need with it, which is important. And it does everything you want. You don't have to worry so much about security or spyware. It's very reliable, very robust. And I think probably my top recommendation for a first-time computer buyer, the Apple iMac. Unfortunately, it isn't the cheapest computer out there. But I think that can be a false economy, as we saw earlier in the show. You don't want to get too cheap. Brian from Columbia, Maryland. Welcome to KFI, Brian.
No, it's not Brian. It's Rob.
Rob, Brian, whatever. I'm sorry. You're right. I misread. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to build a Myth TV.
Oh, good. Yeah.
That will also run OS X 86.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Oh, shooting me down.
Well, I mean, how are you? How dedicated are you that you can, get OS X running with a lot of hacking? If I were you, I don't see the point. If you're building Myth TV, you're building Linux. You're using Linux. Just go ahead and use Linux. In fact, the best way to do Myth TV is with, it'll take all the pain out of it. I don't know. Are you, I guess the question is, are you trying to do this because you want the functionality, or are you trying to do this to learn all about technology?
Both. I am an enthusiast. Okay. I like the concept of Myth TV.
I do too.
But I'm a Mac guy.
Don't worry about
Intel
that.
Intel hardware.
Yeah, don't worry about it. First of all, you don't combine the computer functionality and the TiVo functionality. If you're going to make a Myth TV, just make a Myth TV and have it be kind of a standalone box, in my opinion.
All right.
And the best way to do it, there's a live CD distro of Nopix called Nop Myth. It is so beautiful. It's so elegant. You just put it in there, it installs, and you're done. Myth TV, for those who don't know, is essentially an open source TiVo. Runs on Linux. And the easiest way to do it is Nop Myth. In fact, my good friend Kevin Rose, who is now apparently worth $60 million, according to Business Week, so he can afford a TiVo. But he has a great episode of System. That's his kind of hacker TV show that he does at revision3.com. And I think a couple of episodes ago, he did a video step-by-step installing and setting up and configuring Myth TV. It had a lot of great useful information. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And I would recommend that. Now, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break for news, but let's talk a little bit, because I get this question a lot about, why can't I run my Mac on a PC? You can, illegally. You can. It's quite a hack. It's never going to run as well as a Mac. But I'll talk a little bit about what's involved in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1229.
This is Steve Gregory along the U.S.-Mexico border. Join me tomorrow morning for my special report on guarding the border.
On KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Lovely Sunday afternoon. I'm so glad you're here. We're talking about technology. And our last caller, Rob, wanted to know why he couldn't put OS X on his PC. Why? Well, the simple answer is Apple manufactures hardware. Their business, they see themselves as not a software company, as a hardware company. And even though once before they tried licensing their operating system to other people, they really... They don't develop the operating system to make money. They develop the hardware, and they make a great operating system that goes on the hardware. And in some ways, I respect that, not merely from a business point of view, but because they control the hardware, they can make OS X more reliable than Windows, and they can make the computers more robust. And this is a big issue, I think, on the Windows side. Microsoft, and it's not Microsoft's fault, they have to make Windows run with a virtually infinite combination of hardware. There are thousands of manufacturers. All the parts are from different companies. It's impossible to test Windows against all possible combinations. That's why you have problems like Service Pack 2 not always working. It's just very difficult. Apple doesn't have that issue. They know what the hardware is. There's also the advantage of they can kind of set a standard for hardware quality. And this is, I think, I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm increasingly of the opinion that one of the reasons Windows computers seem less reliable is not Windows' fault. It's that many hardware manufacturers are under such pressure to reduce costs, they use substandard parts. And a lot of Windows PCs are junky. They're just junky. They crash at random times, and it's not Windows. It's unreliable parts. We saw the leaking capacitor issue. That's fixed. That's over. But there are, some of these parts are just substandard. And so Apple doesn't have to worry about that. They know who's making their parts. They can insist on certain quality standards. And they make more expensive computers as a result. But, you know, I think you get what you pay for. And it makes me really mad when you spend any amount of money, whether it's $300 or $1,000 or $3,000 on a PC, and it's unreliable. I have a very expensive Shuttle PC, $3,000 Shuttle PC with great parts, an Enforce 3 motherboard from NVIDIA, an Athlon FX64, very nice machine, and it's been hideously unreliable from day one. And it's unreliable in weird ways, and I've rebuilt the software, and it's the hardware. I know it's the hardware. That's annoying. It's frustrating. Same things will happen with the Mac. Of course they will. But I think they happen less because of Apple's standards. Now, the other side of the equation is Apple makes more money on hardware. Margins are higher on hardware. Well, wait, actually, that's not true, is it? Once you've paid for the research and development on software, it's all profit. Or almost all. What's the cost of a CD in a box? Not much. So margins are higher on software. I mean, look, who's richer, Bill Gates or Steve Jobs? But Apple's decided to be in the hardware business, and I think some of it has to do with quality. I think it really has to do with saying, well, look, we can say we've got this environment, and it's not just a software environment. It's a hardware environment, too. In any event, for whatever reason, they have not licensed OS X for for use on other platforms. It has to be an Apple computer, a Macintosh. So it's illegal to run OS X on other computers. Can you hack it? Yes, you have to break the law by stealing the firmware that Apple does not license to be used without a Macintosh computer. I mean, it's a minor law. You're, in a way, you're breaking the license agreement, but you have to do that. Apple pursues it. In fact, I was looking for all the sites. There used to be a lot of sites that say how to do this, and Apple shut them all down. So Apple's certainly aggressive about pursuing that. I'm sure you can still find out about how to do it if you look around on the internet, but it's all the sites that I was planning to tell you about are gone. It's in theory possible. So if you're you like the challenge, yeah, you can do it. Look around on the internet, you can do it. And it's not frankly that hard. There are emulators too, like Pear PC, Cherry OS. Although I think, I don't know about Cherry OS. I think it was really a Pear PC clone, but there is a SourceForge project called Pear PC that will emulate. Now that would be fully legal, because instead of stealing Apple's firmware, they would emulate it. They would reverse engineer it. And so that's still around at Pear PC. That's on SourceForge. It doesn't give you a very good user experience. It's really more for the glory of it, the fun of it, the investigation. If you want a Mac right now, you got to buy a Mac. Of course, the nice thing is you can buy a Mac and run Windows. I wouldn't waste a Mac on Myth TV. That's a perfect application for an old PC. I mean, that seems like the ideal. Now let's go to Brian. He's in Carmel, New York. Hello, Brian. Welcome to KFI Los Angeles.
Oh, thanks, Leo. Big fan of your television and your internet podcast.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I have a question regarding the MP3 players. Actually, it's a two-part question. First, what's your best alternative to an iPod? What would that be?
I like the iRiver, but I think the Creative Zen is also very good. One of the reasons I like the iRiver, they play OGG file formats. They have really good audio. You know, it's funny, you don't usually think about this, but the audio quality is important on an MP3 player. The kind of amplifier, the kind of output you're getting, even if you're just listening, especially if you're listening on headphones, you're listening very closely. I think iPod has very good audio quality, and I think iRiver has very good audio quality.
Okay, the reason I was asking, because I thought maybe, like, some of the iPods or the newer ones, I don't know, I mean, do you think that they're within regards to pricing, do you think they're overpriced? Do you think they're...
Yes, everything Apple does is overpriced, because they can get away with it. I paid $150 extra to have a black MacBook. You're asking the wrong guy. is an iPod, are iPods expensive? Yes. Are they worth it? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the quality,
quality's great.
Have them and
now, it's interesting. Apple said an interesting thing this week, because people complain, well, iPod, you can't change the battery, it's hard to repair. Apple said, no, we build these to last 4 years. It's a disposable product. After 4 years, we expect you to get a new one. That's the lifespan they expect. So when you're spending $400 or $500, I mean, I tell you, they're not as expensive as they were. In fact, if you go back in time, as I do, being an old guy, you remember maybe on the screensavers, Patrick and I testing the first hard drive-based MP3 players. Man,
I remember that.
Yeah, it was so exciting. You could put it in your car. I mean, they were huge. They were much more expensive than an iPod, and they had they're 5 megabytes, or 5 gigabytes, I should say. We've come a long way. So to say expensive, yeah, they're more expensive than the comparable Arcos or iRiver or Creative Zen. But I think that they're better user interface. They're really elegant. iTunes is a great program. If you've ever tried to sync up some of these other devices on Windows, it can be a nightmare. I just think that Apple deserves the premium because they make a good product. But if you want to save money, I think iRiver is a very good choice.
Okay, appreciate the info. Thanks, Leo.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. You don't think I'm an Apple bigot, do you?
No.
A little bit.
You got the Mac break, but I love that show, by the way.
Yeah,
Mac
that's
break,
we're going to do a special show. Episode for WWDC on Monday or Tuesday, so look for that.
Oh, great. Thanks, Leo. Have a good show.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate your kind words. Twit.tv. Twit.tv. Leo.am is the radio show. See how I got TV and I got AM. Leo.am for the radio show. Twit.tv for the podcast. I am an Apple bigot, but I'll tell you, I have a preference. But my preference changes. If you've listened to me over the years, there were many, many years before OS X came out where I said, you'd be crazy to buy a Mac. You'd be crazy. This thing is a piece of junk. OS 9, OS 8, OS 7. Antiquated operating system. Don't buy it. And a lot of Apple people said, you're a Windows bigot. If I'll tell you, if Vista comes out and at the end of the year and it's a better operating system, I will be the first to say, buy Vista. I'm a bigot, yes, but I think I have an opinion based on using these things and a pretty strong background in using them. And I try them and I try to keep an open mind about it. I'm not a bigot in the sense that I prefer one because it's a pretty shiny color. I try to make a rational choice. And right now, I think if you look at it, by the market backs me up on the iPod anyway, it is a better MP3 player. And I use the other ones, and I'm always kind of disappointed. It's not their interface isn't quite as good. They often have better features. They have an FM tuner, for instance, which you have to add. You have to buy as an add-on from a third party for an iPod. The ability to record, iRiver is great for that. But ultimately, the iPod just seems more elegant. I don't know. It just does. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1247.
Captain Dale Dye, this evening, 5 to 7.
KFI, AM 640.
Seven away from 1. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Phones are down briefly, so I'll give you the number, but you'll get a busy signal in a bit. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. We are working on the phones as we work on the... Isn't it ironic? It's always the technology show where technology goes haywire. It's as if they know I'm here. And they say, we're going to get him. If you were on the line and you got hung up on, that's the problem. And we've got the chief engineer in there, and he's working on it. So apparently the system is somehow ejecting people. We've just for fun in the chat room, we've just put Mini Leo in there. One of the things that IRC is the kind of chat we use. It's the oldest form of chat. It stands for Internet Relay Chat. It predates the World Wide Web. It's that old. It's a very old internet protocol. It's what we use for our chat room. It's irc.dslextreme.com if you want to try it. You don't even have to have an IRC program because we have a Java client on that page and you can just enter in. Give yourself a name though, because otherwise it'll give you a listener and a number, and that's not a good name. But we keep it clean. We have it moderated, and it's a fun place. And it's a place where I've always had a chat room. In fact, I think I started using a chat room when I was doing this show up in San Francisco in the early 90s. And it's great because there are a lot of expert, smart people in there, and I can ask a question, and they'll often fire back answers at me. So I'm always watching the chat room scroll by as I do the show. And we have fun in there, but it's also, you know, let's face it, these are the wiseacres in the back of the class who are, you know, the peanut gallery making fun of me and talking back at me, and I kind of like that too. But sometimes I get my reward. I have a little robot I've put in there. One of the things about IRC that makes it very interesting, in fact, it's one of the reasons hackers use IRC to control computers, is it's very scriptable. And I have a little script that's running in there called Mini Leo, and you can talk to him and ask him questions, and he'll respond. And supposedly, he learns. He's making Dan, my chat moderator, he's making him very upset. Which is another good reason to put him in there.
Phone lines are working.
I think there's there's a little technical issue with Mini Leo. He's not learning right now. He's actually staying stupid, but we'll fix that. I'll fix Mini Leo in a moment. but it's kind of fun to to play with these things. The way hackers use bots in the chat room is they when they take over your system, they very often will put a little IRC chat client on your system. Now, it's invisible to you. You don't see a window scrolling by or anything. It's all hidden away. And when they control your system, they start that program running. And the first thing that program does is log into a chat room. Again, without your knowledge, there's no visible evidence on the screen. But what it does is it gives the hacker a back channel into your computer. It's as if your computer logs into a chat room and says, what is thy bidding? What is thy bidding, master? And then the hacker will look in this chat room, and there may be 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 machines in there, all waiting for him to tell him to do something. And that is very often what hackers do when they co-opt your machine. They're not interested in your personal goods. They are interested in using your connection to do something. Sometimes they'll sell it to a spammer who will use your machine to relay spam because they can't get any legitimate companies to do it. Sometimes they'll use it, and this is where a chat bot is most often used, they'll use it to attack other systems. So it's not unusual to have a chat net, a botnet of 1,000 or more computers, sometimes many, many more computers, all in this chat room, all waiting for a command. The hacker will type a command into a chat client and say, here's the address to attack, and they'll all attack simultaneously. That's how they bring sites down. Big sites, too. If you have a big enough botnet, there's no way a site can prevent that. So that's one nefarious way that IRC is used. It's also used frequently for piracy, for music trading. It's very hard to control. It's kind of the wild west of the internet. But we have a safe little corner of the world that we have heavily moderated so that you can go in there safely and use it. And Mini Leo is not learning, I know, because Mini Leo is doesn't have disk access right now, so he can't save things. So I will fix that. So if you want to go in there and chat with Mini Leo, you can. We have, by the way, one of the fun things about the chat room is there are listeners all over the world. We have people in England, France. I think there was somebody in there from China in there. And it's kind of fun. It's a really neat way to meet people who listen all over the world. You get to that by going, as I said, to irc.dslextreme.com. Show notes have links as well at leo.am. And I am told the phones are fixed. So we're going to go back to the phones. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. I will log back in. We will get those phones working, and we will start taking your calls when we come back. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 12:59. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
August 6, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. We have the phones working, I think. Let's see. I will know in a moment when I say hello to Jessica in Evansville, Indiana. Hello, Jessica.
Hi.
It's working.
It's working.
Yay. What can I do for you, Jessica?
Well, I'm thinking about getting a Mac.
Yay.
And I do a lot of editing, video and photo, and I
okay.
have my own family website.
Wow. How old are you, Jessica?
12.
Wow, that's great. I'm impressed.
And I was wondering if the software on Macs is any better than what I'm
yes.
using now.
Yes. What are you using to do the video editing?
Adobe Premiere Elements.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I think you'll find that iMovie, which comes with the Mac, is about the same. One of the nice things about iMovie, though, is it sees your photos in iPhoto. It sees your music in iTunes. So it makes it very easy to incorporate music and photos into it. The nice thing about the Mac, it's an integrated experience. They all come from Apple, so they're all integrated together. If you get really good and you can get Dad to pony up some money, you can get Final Cut Pro, which is actually used to edit many TV shows and movies. It's a pro product, and that runs in the Mac. I would say Macs are used very predominantly for video editing. Similarly, for photo editing, iPhoto is a good start. Do you use Photoshop?
Yeah.
There's a problem because you've spent the money on Photoshop for Windows, and you have to buy it anew for the Mac.
Yeah, and would there be any major learning curves?
No. Photoshop on the Mac is identical to Photoshop on Windows. The only thing you'll have to learn to do is that the command key is the same as the control key. So you just it's a different key, but it'll take you 3 seconds because your brain is still adept. you'll be able to adjust to that very quickly. I think I don't think you're going to have a lot of trouble, but that is one strong disincentive, is that you have to buy new software. Now, it comes with iPhoto. It comes with iMovie, iDVD. In fact, one of the nice things about iMovie, it handles high def, unlike Adobe Premiere Elements. So if you have a high def or get a high def video camera, you can edit and burn high def video as well. And that's kind of nice. Are you thinking about getting an iMac or a laptop?
Probably an iMac.
Yeah, I think that's a very good choice. My daughter is 14. My son is about to be 12 in about a week. And they both are Mac babies. They grew up with Mac. They've used some... If actually, I take that back. When they were really young, until they were about 6 or 7, they used Windows and played a lot of Windows games and stuff. But when they actually started using a computer as a real user, then it was Mac. And I think that they do a lot of the same things you're probably doing. Maybe you're a little bit more advanced. You're doing your own family website. That's really neat. I think you'll find that everything is easier on a Mac. Most content creators work on Macs. The kind of stuff you're doing is exactly the kind of stuff Mac was designed to do.
Do you think I'd have a learning curve with iMovie?
No, you're 12. You'll get it before the day is over. You will get it.
Yeah.
The people who have trouble with learning, with changing, are older people, right? It's young people. In fact, people often say this, oh, no, Leo, you know, in the schools they should be using Windows because that's what they'll be using when they get into real life. Well, I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, you won't be in real, quote, life for another 8 or 9 years. Who knows what people are going to be using in 8 or 9 years? But second of all, kids in school, a Windows PC, a Mac, they don't care. They're more concerned with what they're doing. And it's close enough that they're not going to be, it's not like having to learn French and Spanish. It's not going to be a difficult thing for you. I don't think you have any difficulty at all. You'll immediately see there are a few, the little things that bug you are, you know, Windows puts the close box for a window in the upper right-hand corner. Mac puts it in the upper left-hand corner. It's things like that. How long is that going to take you to get used to? Not long. One thing I do suggest, very much so, Jessica, is that you get a two-button mouse, or just use your Windows mouse on the Mac. It'll work fine on your Mac.
Yeah.
You'll be much happier with that. Where do your family's webpage, do you do it yourself from scratch, or do you use a blogger software or Live Journal, or what do you use for the family webpage?
I'm still an amateur at that, so I use FrontPage.
FrontPage is fine, but I think you'll find when you get the Mac, you'll like iWeb a lot better. I don't actually recommend iWeb. It, like FrontPage, is a closed solution. It's hard to move to other programs. There are other, probably better programs than iWeb for web design, but to get started, it's easier than FrontPage, and I think you'll find you get much better looking pages right off the bat. You'll probably want to get your folks to spring for a .Mac account, which is $100 a year, but has a lot of advantages, including free hosting for your web page. Okay? Good luck. I think you're on the right path, Jessica. It is. Do not be afraid. It's funny. We had an older woman and a young girl, both interested in getting computers, worried about, is it going to be hard to get used to a new way of doing things? And I think in both cases, it's not. It's easier for the kids. It's very easy for the kids. I don't think they even... I watch my kids. They don't even think. Windows, Mac, no. It's a little harder for us old folks because our fingers, you know, we don't pick things up as quickly. But it's very good for us. It's very good for us. That's a good way to stay young, is to throw your brain a few curves now and again. Not a bad idea. Rahway, New Jersey. We've got Jim on the line. Hello, Jim. Welcome to KFI.
Yes, sir. How we doing? I have a Casia 7135 smartphone.
Okay.
And it went belly up about a month ago.
Okay.
My wife, being a wonderful person she is, bought me on eBay two of the exact same models.
All right.
One will work on the system I'm on now. One will not. The problem is this phone has one of the Series 1 chips in it. And the phone company I'm with will not put any new phones on with the Series 1 chip.
Oh, I hate that.
Series 2 chip.
Oh, I hate that.
I was wondering, would you know of a place or anywhere, hypothetically speaking, of course.
I know where you're going here. Okay, go ahead.
This is a Kevin Rose type of question.
Yes, I thought so. a little hacking, huh?
Had one of the phones that she bought cloned so that the phone company would think it was my old phone.
Yeah, in fact, I've seen this done in you know, an independent phone store. They have these. They often have these little boxes. Who's your carrier?
Verizon.
Verizon, yeah. It's a CDMA phone. I think that's pretty easy to do. But you've got to find a friendly phone company. Now, the problem is these phone stores, they'll do it because they want you as a customer, right? Now, you're not buying the phone from them, and you're not buying service from them.
Right.
So you're going to have to do a little finagling, a little schmoozing. A little maybe some greasing of the old Palmarinos.
Well, that's no problem because I got it set up where I want, and it's under insurance. I could get a Palm 160 or the 650.
I like this Kyocera. I think this is a neat phone.
Yeah, and the part I like best about it is with the type of work I do, it's a flip phone,
right.
So it hides the screen so it doesn't get ripped apart.
So you didn't get this from Verizon originally either, did you?
I originally had a 6035.
Oh, I see.
I got from Verizon.
Got it.
But they weren't selling the 6135.
Right.
When I want to upgrade to that one, so I got that directly from one of their sellers.
But a lot of people
and I
do
no
this,
problem putting it on.
And there's more and more of a market in this because the U.S. cell phone companies are pigheaded. They won't bring in the best phones from Asia. They think Americans are too stupid or something. I don't know what it is. So they just don't bring them in. And so more and more intelligent cell phone customers in the States are going overseas and buying these things and saying, Mom, I want this phone. I want these capabilities. And the problem is that, you know, integrating into the network, it's a little easier with a GSM phone because you could just switch the SIM chip on a CDMA phone. And then Verizon, of course, is a CDMA carrier. You've got to reprogram the phone. And really, I don't recommend it. You can go online. If you go online and look, you'll find people who have unlocking software and reprogramming software. I'm always nervous about buying that stuff. Who knows who these people are?
Well, I found it, but I haven't found it for the Casilla. I found it for other brand names, but not the Casilla.
Yeah, it might be that, you know, it's not out there. I don't know. I would look for a Verizon dealer, not a official Verizon store, one of the independents that sells a variety of different companies' service. And look for people who look like they're smart, they're hackers. Look for somebody who looks like Kevin Rose, and just say, hey, dude, you know, can you help me out here? A lot of times, these guys are proud of the fact that they know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And don't intimate this is illegal. It's not illegal. You're paying Verizon. Look, what is illegal about it? You're not trying to get free.
Exactly. That's why I look at it.
You're not trying to get free service. You just want to use your phone. And I don't, you know, it's a little, I think, greedy of the phone companies to say, no, you can't use any phone. You have to use our phone. Now, if it caused compatibility issues or something like that, I could understand. And it may be the case. I don't know. But if it's merely that they want you to buy a phone they sell, I don't think you get in trouble. I think you just got to find a friendly, a tame, independent phone reseller. And I've seen, I mean, I got a guy. Of course I got a guy. First thing I did is I found a guy. You know, whenever I have questions, I go to him. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 117.
This is Steve Gregory along the U.S.-Mexico border. Join me tomorrow morning for my special report on guarding the border.
On KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. I'm here till 2, and Dr. Dean Adell. Greg in Los Angeles, welcome to KFI.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
I have an older digital still camera.
Okay.
This Comedia D395.
Okay.
And it has a movie mode on it.
Yep.
It'll do 15 seconds at one resolution and 60 seconds at a lower resolution.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if there's either a hardware or software or firmware hack where I can get past that limitation.
No, I don't think so. The newer Cam Medias will do it to the size of the memory.
Oh, it will.
Does it say specifically that that's a limitation in the documentation?
It does.
Yeah.
And it looks like, I'm not sure how these cameras work, but some sort of RAM on board that it captures into.
That's probably what's going on, exactly. Yeah. It's an older camera, and because it didn't have the speed to write to memory as it recorded, it records to RAM, and then that's the limit of the RAM, right?
Right.
The newer, almost all the newer cameras will, are because the flashcards are faster now, will store to flashcard to the size of the flashcard, so you can get 15, 20 minutes on them. And you know, the camera modes are amazing now.
Since this is an older camera, I'm probably buy a new one anyway. So
yeah, I think it's, you know, maybe you could hack it, but that's a significant hack. It's the firmware that's telling it that.
I see.
Yeah, I think that's pretty difficult to modify. I mean, I would never say you can't, because it's amazing what people have done. But it's certainly a lot of effort for very little value.
Right. No, you're right. That is true. It's more just for the fun of it, I guess.
Yeah, I understand. I would say that kind of thing is pretty well tied to the hardware because of the nature of how it captures. You'd have to change how it captures, and you'd have to change. You know, you'd have to reprogram the whole thing.
Right.
It'd be hard to do.
One other thing regarding that early caller, Jessica, you were saying that she would have to replace software. With the newer Macs and Boot Camp, is that still the case?
No, you could run and win. You could absolutely. In fact, I should have mentioned that. Of course, for free, you can get Boot Camp. You have to have a copy of Windows. You can install Windows and then run your old Photoshop exactly as you would on the Mac. I actually like Parallels a little bit better, and I notice Apple is pushing Parallels a little harder. That's the one that lets you run Windows within the Macintosh OS, so you don't even have to reboot. But that costs you money. Then you have to buy Parallels.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. I should have mentioned that. And that, I think that's probably one of the reasons you're starting to see some real take-up on the Macintosh. Last quarter, 12% increase in sales. I bet you see double that this quarter. I think you're going to start seeing more and more people go to Mac because they can use their Windows software. It isn't such a risky proposition.
Yeah, I'm a Mac user, and I'm about to probably buy another laptop and with that option of having OS X and XP on it.
You know, OS X is a very robust, reliable operating system, very elegant, works very well. One of the reasons I like it, though, because I'm a geek, is I like having Unix under the hood. I have a command line. That Leo bot that I'm running in the chat room, that's a Unix program. It's not a Mac program, and I'm running it from the Unix command line. And the capability to do things like that and still have a lovely graphical interface on top of it makes it, to me, kind of the best of, and now that I can run Windows, it's really the best of all worlds. So that's,
you just have to lower the prices, I think, and then
yeah, and they're not going to, because they're getting the price right. They don't need to lower
right.
the price, right? And you know, that's
product.
if Dell could charge $200 more a computer, they sure would.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are many PC companies that do that. You know, Alienware, which Dell just bought, Falcon Northwest. There are a lot of premium PC companies that charge more. And frankly, I don't know if you get more when you buy those. I mean, I think that, this Shuttle PC, Shuttle is one of them. Has been a disappointment to me. I've recommended Shuttle for years, and I really thought they were high quality. I happened to get a lemon. It doesn't mean they're all lemons, but it just shows you that, sometimes you can pay a premium and not get premium quality products.
Appreciate that, Leo, very much.
Thanks for the call. Take care.
Good afternoon.
You too. Appreciate it, Greg. I don't want to take another call because I only have a few seconds left. Let me tell you how to get to the show notes, KFIAM640.com. That's the KFI website. Go there, and under shows, there's a shows menu. You'll see my name. If you're listening live, you'll see my picture there, and you can click right on that. And that'll take you to I have a mini page on KFI. That's not the show notes, though. Those are stored on a separate site. That's the so-called official website. So under my picture, you'll see a link that says official website. Go there. That's leo.am. This is show 272 for Sunday, August 6th. And so click the Sunday button. You'll find all the information. We post the shows. I edit them and post them shortly after the show, so you can listen as well if you're not in town. So if you head out, and you can always listen on the internet via KFIAM640.com. Or if you miss the show, you can listen to the podcast. Many ways to get it. And I appreciate all of you who do listen on the internet as well as on the radio. This show has done very well in the 2 years I've been here. I'm really thrilled, really happy. I'm very grateful to y'all. We're going to take a break. News is coming up. Then more of your calls, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Matt Drudge, tonight 7 to 10.
KFI, AM 640.
136 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, here till 2, And Dr. Dean Edel Mark in La Cañada, welcome to KFI.
Leo.
Mark.
I would like to follow up on what you said before about iPods.
Yes.
Particularly, I would love to get an iPod. I totally buy everything you said about it being the best MP3 portable player.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is that I have all of my library and stuff on Music Match on a PC. And I am a little concerned also that iPod and Apple and iTunes kind of limit your ability to deal with the different file types.
Yeah, let me talk a little bit about that, because this is copy protection, and that's really the bane of all of these things. And it is a, it's a killer. Copy protection is just such a bad idea all around, but it's something we have to live with. If the music that you have in Music Match is not copy protected, in other words, if you didn't buy it on Rhapsody or Napster or one of the Windows-based music stores, no problem.
Right. If I haven't. Everything is ripped.
Yeah, they're MP3s. No problem.
Yeah.
You won't even... In fact, you can find out for yourself before you even buy an iPod by downloading iTunes and just saying, look for MP3s on your hard drive. Or if you want to do it manually, which might be a better idea, because otherwise you get a lot of MP3s from stuff you didn't expect, like games and stuff. If you just say, no, here's the Music Match folder. Please import those files. There it is. Done. Boom. So because they're not protected. If they were protected, that's a whole other matter, because you cannot, and this is the real issue, you cannot play Windows protected Windows media files on an iPod any more than you can play iTunes protected music on a non-iPod.
Okay.
That's the problem, is that there are mutually exclusive copy protection techniques being used. I wish there were one simple one. Apple has, as far as I'm concerned, acted monopolistically.
But there's no issue where Apple has made it difficult to deal with things other than the AAC files?
Right. No, if it's MP3 or if it's an AAC, an unprotected AAC, that's not a problem. It's only if it's something you bought at the iTunes Music Store. And as of right now, I mean, there have been in the past ways to remove this copy protection. As of right now, the only way to remove it is to burn an audio CD and re-rip, which, of course, degrades the quality.
Right.
That's, you know, if you don't like that, the answer is don't buy music online. You know, buy CDs and rip them. Then there's no...
Okay, well, then that shouldn't be a problem for me.
Yeah, it sounds like you've ripped everything, and that was probably a wise thing to do. I mean, the people who hate copy protection just do it that way, and then you don't have to deal with it.
I buy it because I want backups of stuff.
I agree. And that's a real risk with the iTunes Music Store, because unlike us other music stores, if you lose it, you've lost it. You cannot re-download it.
Okay.
Which really makes me angry.
Yeah.
Believe me, I'm not defending Apple in this at all. I think they're monopolistic, and it's a way of selling more iPods by saying it'll only play on iPod devices. On the other hand, there may be a reason for it in Apple's defense. The copy protection is less restrictive on the Apple side. You can do more with it. You can burn more CDs. You can unprotected CDs. You can play it back on three computers. It's a little easier to transport around. So, actually, is it five computers? I think five computers. So they've, in a way, they've tried to make copy protection less intrusive. But I'm with you. Screw the copy protection. Rip them yourself. Buy the CDs and rip them yourself. It costs a little bit more, but then you can do anything you want with it.
Right. All right. Well, you put my mind at ease.
Yeah,
thanks.
I think
very much.
You know, a good test would be just download iTunes and see if it'll import the files. It will. And if you can listen to them in iTunes, you can put them on an iPod and listen to them just fine on an iPod. I mean, that's the bottom line on that. Let's go to Chris in Mission Viejo. Hello, Chris. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Good.
I have a question about the DivX video player.
Yeah.
And my question is this. I rented a movie from a website, and they sent a confirmation email, and when you click the hyperlink to download the video that requires the DivX player,
yep,
the DivX player opens up, and then it quickly sends up an error message that says DivX has to close due to a problem, and then that's it.
Huh.
Any idea why that might be happening?
No, I mean, that's what I would try doing is getting other DivX movies to see if they play.
And I have tried that, and those seem to work fine.
They play fine. Okay. I'm wondering now if this is an issue of copy protection or what. Where did you buy those movies?
My son actually did it,
okay.
And I would have to ask him.
I would go some
type of cartoon from Comic-Con or something.
Okay, I would go to that site and take a look at what they've done.
Okay.
You got the DivX player. When you install the DivX player, that installs the DivX codecs. DivX is a a compression technique that is a very good, high quality compression technique. I like it a lot. You see a lot of movies done in DivX, mostly pirated movies done in DivX, because you get very high quality at very small file sizes. But to play it back, you do need to download a special DivX codec. You don't have to use a DivX player. And that's the other thing, is once you've got the codec installed, you could try it in other players, like VLC or Windows Media Player, to see if it plays back there. But if that movie isn't playing, it may be either the movie's damaged. You know, in other words, if other DivX movies are playing fine, then it's something about that file, not about the player.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the movie is even downloading, though. It's not getting a chance to download into the player.
Usually with DivX, you don't play it streaming. You download it and then play it.
Yeah.
So see if you can get that file on the hard drive. That sounds like the problem right there.
And I've tried that. I've tried to right-click and then save as to the hard drive somewhere. And it's you get a Windows error that says...
Interesting.
Some type of error that says you can't save it. Doesn't recognize that type.
You know, what I don't know, and I'll have to find out, is whether DivX supports copy protection. Because it sounds like if somebody's selling movies in the DivX format, that they probably would want to have copy protection in there. To my knowledge, DivX doesn't have copy protection, but there's no reason why they couldn't have added that capability in order to support things like, you know, commercial movies. I'm sure the DivX company, I mean, it's a private company. I'm sure they would very much like to support that. So I'm looking through here their specs, and I don't see any copy protection support. So I'm not sure. You know, is the movie a commercial movie, or is it a kind of a fan movie, or a...
I want to say it's a fan movie.
Yeah.
The way my son described it.
It probably is.
Of anime type thing.
Yeah.
That he's real.
The other thing you might try doing is going to Xvid, which is an open source DivX, xvid.org,
okay,
and download those codecs. Maybe that'll work. But it sounds to me like you don't actually have the file, that it may even be that the server that's offering the file isn't alive.
Okay. Well, maybe
you need to have the file, or it won't play back.
Okay. Well, then I'll talk to him, and I'll go back to the site and start there.
And Xvid might be a good alternative. If it's a fan film, it'll probably play back in Xvid or DivX.
Okay.
So if there were a problem with the DivX player, which it doesn't sound like there is, but if there were, the Xvid codec and player would be a way to test that, to see if that works better. I like DivX. What I don't like is that it's proprietary. I'm essentially, always have been strongly in favor of open standards, which is why I don't like Windows Media Format. If you're relying on a company to support something, you're in the hands of that company. If they decide to add copy protection, you don't have a choice. So I like open standards. MP3 and AAC are kind of funny because they're kind of open. They're not really open. They were created by a German company called Fraunhofer. Both AAC and MP3. AAC is the sequel or successor to MP3. Are licensed from Fraunhofer. So they're technically not open, but because they're so dominant, particularly MP3, you know, it feels like an open standard. If you really wanted open standards, you'd look at Xvid for video, Ogg Vorbis for audio. These are created by the community. They're open. They're supported by all. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Then you're not in the pocket of any one company. Slick, Boise, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Slick.
Hey, I need to ask, I'm looking for a drive imaging software or a good backup software that will back up to DVDs or CDRs.
Drive imaging is different. Oh, you know, I've seen you in the chat room. Drive imaging is different from backup, understand.
Okay.
Drive imaging makes an exact copy of the drive as it is today. Now, that's a backup, but it has a disadvantage. You can't do incremental backups then, or often can't. You can't say, oh, okay, we'll just save the things that have changed.
Storage.
But it's great for one-time storage. I use it this way. I'll get Windows set up just the way I like it. You know, with all my applications, all my drivers, it's working perfectly, and I'll make an image of that because I don't have to now do a Windows install ever again. I can get right back to that point in about 5 minutes. That's the nice thing about images. They restore quickly. So it's like freeze drying. It's an image, exactly the way, a picture of the way the drive was. A backup program generally will back up everything, and then will only back up changes after that. you know, and so that's a little faster because you make what's called incremental backups, and maybe weekly or monthly you'll make a full backup, and then you'll do incremental backups in between. I don't like backup programs, to be honest with you, because you tend to get this big ball of data that you aren't sure you've got everything in it. For backing up, I generally just back up the files. I'll copy them to a CD or DVD. I do like using images, though. Now, on the Mac, it's a little different. There's actually an image program called SuperDuper that does what's called a sparse image. It makes an image, but then it can do incremental backups, enhancing the image. I don't know of a program on the Windows side that does that. My favorite imaging program on Windows is Drive Snapshot. You probably saw me say that in the...
Yeah.
In the chat room. That's a German company. What I like about it is you don't have to leave Windows. With Ghost, you have to boot into DOS.
Is it selective?
In terms of what you back up?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. If you're just going to image and you want to knock out other users' files,
yep.
If you're using like on a Windows XP unit, then you can tell it not to do all users, just do one user.
That's an interesting question. You can restore one. You can do that with restore. I'm not sure if you can do it with backup. I would try it. They have a 30-day free trial. That's the nice thing about that one.
You know, and then the problem is getting that image onto a DVD or a CD.
Right. Almost all of them will
shrink it.
Well, yeah, or they'll span disks. They'll that's what
yeah,
Ghost.
That's what I'm trying to get away from.
Oh, you want to get it all on one
image.
DVD?
I'd really like to have one image.
Well, if it won't shrink to 4.7 gigabytes, you're going to be out of luck.
Yeah.
In that case, what I usually do with imaging, frankly, is back up to a second hard drive.
Okay.
Get an external hard drive and backup. That's the best backup device in the world is an external hard drive. And then a good strategy would be, for instance, get your system just the way you like it, make that image onto an external hard drive, USB or FireWire, and then back up as you make changes, back up the changes, you know, back up your data files and so forth. Then that one external disk has kind of everything you need to restore it. You'll restore the image, getting everything all up to date, and then you'll add the changed files directly from a backup on the hard drive. That's kind of how I work. I really have a number of backup strategies. In fact, lately I've added a network-attached storage, which is a large terabyte external network drive that automatically will make copies. And it's nice. It doesn't use backup software. It just makes it kind of synchronizes the directories. It says, what directories do you want? Okay, I'm going to copy those over. And it gives me a real nice peace of mind because I know I have, if my hard drive fails, I have a very quick way to get back up and running. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 149.
KFI's big stories. We're on it.
Eric Olson has told investigators that he's been molesting kids for the past 3 years.
He has admitted he probably has about 100 to 200 female victims.
The Putin vegetable warehouse was attacked by the Israelis. Lebanese officials say some 28 workers there were killed.
KFI AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
High-speed internet, it should be a right, not a privilege. Everybody deserves high-speed internet, don't you? Maybe you've been avoiding it because you thought it was too expensive. Not with DSL Extreme. High-speed internet is very affordable. DSL Extreme has the lowest price for DSL in the country. $12.95 a month. And it's not some teaser weirdo rate that, you know, you get for 3 months and then it's up to $70 a month. No, this is guaranteed for a year. It's there's no service charge, no additional things to sign up for. You don't have to sign up for long distance, anything like that. That's it. It's all it costs, $12.95 a month. The modem's free. The support is free. The setup is free. And you get great service. I'm a DSL Extreme customer. I can vouch for that. Some restrictions do apply. It's not available in all areas. Better call them. 866-2-GETNET, 866-2-GETNET, or visit them online at dslextreme.com. You owe yourself high-speed internet. You owe it to your kids. It's simply the most important upgrade you can make to your internet, to your computer. Call 866-2-GET-NET and get DSL Extreme.
Handle on the news, warts and all. Tomorrow morning, 6 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
.154 KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, for just a few more minutes on KFI. A reminder, of course, the Apple announcement is tomorrow, Worldwide Developers Conference, and lots of people expect some very interesting things from Apple. We'll see. It should be a very interesting speech. Maybe they'll announce a phone. Maybe they'll announce new Macs. Maybe they'll announce nothing. We'll cover it, though, for on my Mac Break Show, which is a podcast available along with all my other podcasts at twit.tv, TWIT.TV. And we're trying to get that. We'll be there live recovering it. And then, of course, it'll take us a little while to edit and get it out. We'll try to get it out by the end of the day on Monday. But the details there, and we'll have lots of experts. And then we're launching, at the same time, we're launching a new Mac audio podcast, Mac Break Weekly. That'll probably be Wednesday. We'll tape that. Just give people a chance to kind of absorb whatever Apple announces, if it should be anything. Jay, Texarkana, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Yeah.
Got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Why in the world don't CDs, DVDs, and all these other forms of media not have a protective case around them? Is it something to do with Sony's mini disc, a patent on that, or something like that? Because it just drives me insane.
Yeah, they used to. Remember, I don't know if you remember, but the earliest recordable CDs, or actually they were DVDs, I guess, were the DVD RAM, and they were CD RAM too. They came in cases. They required a case, and that would protect it a little bit better. But I think that the idea was to make it as simple and inexpensive as possible. You wouldn't be able to make a 35-cent CD blank if you had to put a case around it each time. So you just got to be careful with them. The real risk on a CD or a DVD is not, ironically, not scratching the bottom. There's they're layered. If you think about it as a layer cake, the top layer is, of course, the label, the paint. And then underneath that, there is a thin reflective layer, then a layer of polycarbonate, then the recording layer, which, depending on the technology, could be dye or could actually be something that can be melted. And then another layer of polycarbonate on the other side. That's the backside to protect it. A scratch in the polycarbonate, the non-label side, can cause problems because it can reflect back the laser, so the laser can't read the coating underneath. In fact, there was a recent article. A guy figured out that if you use hair gel to fill that in, you can actually recover some scratch discs. The kind of scratch you can't recover from is actually on the label side. If you scratch the reflective material underneath the paint, the disc will never work again. There's a lot of redundancy in CDs and DVDs, but a scratch of the reflective paint means that area is no longer readable. And generally, that means the end of it. You're right. Maybe these should be better made, better protected, but they ain't. We're just kind of stuck with that. Mike and your Belinda, you're the last call. Welcome to KFI. Hello, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with Internet Explorer. I used to be able to go into KFI, open or launch the KFI online,
right,
and it would open up in another window.
Right.
It stopped doing that.
Now what does it do?
It just locks up.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
Just,
and it's not only the KFI site, but other site. That was just an example.
I don't know. I mean, it's clearly, you might look at your Internet options and make sure that you've got them set. You know, you can change how it opens in another window. You can change that behavior. But it doesn't sound like that's the issue, because if it's not opening at all or it's crashing, there's something wrong with Internet Explorer. And there's a real problem there, because Internet Explorer ain't just any program. It's deep within the guts of Windows. You can't, it's hard to fix. You might try going to Internet Explorer 7. Beta 2 is now out, and it seems pretty reliable. You might try not using Internet Explorer and using Firefox most of the time. I don't know how to tell you how to fix a problem with Internet Explorer, because, it's kind of hard to fix. It's like there's a problem with Windows, really. There is a Windows recovery process you can use if you have a Windows install disk. You go through, it's kind of counterintuitive. You go through as if you're going to install Windows, all the way, through the license agreement, everything. And just before you erase Windows and start over, it'll say, you want to repair that? You have an existing issue copy. You want to repair that? Try that. You need your Windows install disk. You go through the entire install process right up to the point where you would actually install it. It'll ask you, do you want to repair this disk? And you can say yes. That's not the recovery console. It's completely different. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm out of time. Dr. Dean Adele is here. I'll be back next Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. I hope you will be back here with me. I'll see you on the net at twit.tv. Have a great Sunday afternoon. It is 1:59. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the Internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.